We are recording.
All right, thank you. Good evening and welcome. I'm Sean Brenham, president of the Delaware State Board of Education. I called a March 20th regular meeting minute to order. It is 5 p.m. This meeting is open to the public in person in the cabinet room of the Townsend Building in Dover, Delaware, and electronically via Zoom. The Delaware State Board of Education published the public meeting notice and meeting information on March 13th on the state public meeting calendar site. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There's time allotted for regulations and then general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the meeting URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you have joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be available to the public on our website within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor say aye, and we only do a roll call if there is a dissent. Also, as a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name. Mr. Avila, please do a roll call of the Delaware State Board members.
Yes, sir. Mr. Brennan?
Present.
Dr. Griffin?
Present.
Dr. LaPaglia?
Present.
Reverend Powell?
Present.
Mr. Sawney?
Present.
Mr. Simmons?
Present.
Ms. Stevens?
Present.
Dr. Zabel?
Present.
Mr. President, you have a floor.
Thank you. Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin and State Board staff Kathleen Smith and Marco Avila are participating in tonight's meeting. First on the agenda is approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on March 13th. If there are no changes to the agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
LaJavia, so moved.
LaJavia has made a motion. I need a second.
Simmons, second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Approval of the February 20th regular meeting minutes. The February 20th regular meeting minutes were provided to the board in review in advance of this meeting. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion to approve the February 20th regular meeting minutes as presented?
So moved, Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second.
Al has second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Secretary's report. Has Secretary Martin been able to join us?
I don't see that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There she is.
How about that?
All righty, right on time.
Yep.
All right, Secretary, we're glad to see you online with us tonight, and fire away.
Hi, everybody. It's good to see you all. I am actually in Washington, D.C. right now, and sorry I couldn't be there in person, but thank you all for joining and having a good meeting this evening.
All right. Oh, never mind. Anybody have any questions? I can't find your statement for tonight. I'm getting there. Too much paperwork for me.
Go ahead to the top page.
Found it. You know what am I doing? We got it. Okay, Secretary report that she.
So, did you read that first?
No. Can you go ahead and give her your report, Secretary Martin?
Oh, yes. I didn't know that was. Last time I had this mixed up, didn't I, Kathleen, where I gave it. Are we switching the order so I do it while I'm still able to join today?
Yes, ma'am. That's why we had moved your secretary report up to before the presentations.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you. Well, last time when we had our meeting, I gave an introduction just because I was meeting you all for the first time. And in my introduction, I didn't give my report. And then I asked Kathleen, did I just mess up and give the report at the wrong time? So I had the agenda out of order, but I appreciate you moving it so that I do have to sign off maybe a little bit before the meeting ends. I'm not sure what time we'll finish today. So thanks for moving it. So I'll give you some highlights right now in my monthly report here. Delaware's student, well, first of all, I guess I should just start by saying before I get into some of the specific details around Delaware, it's not lost on anybody, I don't think, that what just happened in the last hour is the president signed an executive order to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. And you all know that that's where I most recently came from. And I happened to be in Washington, D.C., not for the signing of that order. This was planned way before I even knew I was actually coming to Delaware. This is an annual meeting for the Council of Great City Schools. And I was addressing some aspiring superintendents, which is why I'm in D.C., but it's an interesting time in DC right now. And of course, the implications for Delaware are things that we're all tracking very closely. So I'll go into more specifics around the progress and the work that's happening in our state. Specifically, I'm going to start with the student loan repayment program that's awarded loan relief in Delaware to nearly 700 educators that work in our high need schools and subject areas. This is in the 2024-2025 cycle. So this year, 568 high-need educators each received $1,400. 120 speech language pathologists and mental health staff were awarded $4,000 each, and that was to support their service in Delaware Public Schools. Now this program for us in Delaware, it's in its seventh year, and we've received over 1,000 applications before closing on November 30th, 2024. And the program has included speech language pathologists and mental health staff since 2023. So it's good progress there, the loan relief for educators. It's one of the ways we continue to invest and attract and retain people into the teaching profession and including the speech pathologists and mental health staff that are so necessary. Second, the Delaware Department of Education has hosted two convenings in response to the governor's executive order number one, the very first order that he signed right after his swearing in was about promoting the expansion of having registered apprenticeship opportunities in state government being one of the largest employers in Delaware. The executive order number one was focused on this. And so we've had two convenings so far. At the first meeting to implement the executive order number one, the group, the participants in EO1 got an overview of what work-based learning looks like in Delaware, what the registered apprenticeship program looks like, and we were able to look at the existing activities. Where do we already show progress and show that we're actually good at bringing people into state government? That's in the Delaware State Parks, specifically as a state agency that brings in registered apprenticeships, and we want to expand that. In the second convening of the EO committee, EO1 committee, we were focused on the barriers. Why are we not bringing more students into registered apprenticeships in the state? And what kinds of opportunities could we create across state government and agencies that would support more registered apprenticeships in state government? And we just are having the final convening taking place on March 25th. We're going to review a draft report and we're going to make recommendations to the governor. And the final report is going to be submitted by March 31st. And EO1 was always intended to be an open and close, like a 30-day or maybe it's a little more than 30 days timeline of making recommendations to the governor. So they're making good progress there. And it's a way to bring more pathways into state government and giving students registered apprenticeships. And the governor's being a model for the state, showing that we'd like to see more businesses and more employers create apprenticeships like we're doing at the state government level. Third item is that we at the Department of Ed have partnered with another state agency. That's the Department of Services for Children, Youth, and Their Families, and with the National Alliance for Partnership and Equity to enhance the outcomes for students with IEPs that are engaged in career technical education pathways. It's a pipeline project for equity pilot. We launched it in January at the Silver Lake Treatment Center in Middletown, and participants are earning work-based learning credits. They're getting stipends, they're supporting DSCYF's accountability goals, and they're contributing all of the expert testimony on equity issues. It's a statewide showcase on this project will be held on May 14th. I want to tell you about the literacy coaches. We have 11 literacy coaches that are hired through phase two of our early literacy program that started this month. The new coaches are going to be in place by June. And during the first phase of the program, four coaches were hired in Colonial. And four coaches were hired. Three were in Colonial. One was in Thomas Edison. And the school systems are using a sub grant to build the capacity of the literacy coaches. So to move the literacy work forward, as you know, we declared a literacy emergency and we have work to do here. And literacy coaching is one of the best ways that I know from experience to improve literacy outcomes. We've also completed phase one of our literacy review to ensure that the teacher prep programs are equipping our future teachers with the skills that they need to deliver high quality evidence-based literacy instruction. If students are graduating from the universities and they don't know how to teach reading, then we're starting behind the eight ball and getting our students to be able to read proficiently by third grade. So working with the educator preparation programs is a key part of this whole strategy. During this phase, the coursework for the education preparation programs were something that we reviewed. We were looking at their alignment. Are your teacher preparation programs aligned with Senate Bill 133? Are they aligned with the Senate with the Science of Reading framework? And then we worked with in partnership with Teacher Prep Inspections US, TPI US, to review the established baselines and whatever the current practices might be, and identified what the areas of improvement are. So far, as we're doing these educator preparation programs, we have some preliminary findings that we've shared with the educator preparation programs, and that's giving them the feedback they need so they can refine their programs. Then we'll move into phase two, where we'll do on-site reviews, and we're scheduling those for the fall. So that's how you continue to move, creating educator excellence and having teachers graduating from their preparation programs prepared to teach literacy. This month, we're inviting all of our teachers to participate in a professional learning opportunity, and that's around secondary literacy instruction, moving writers from compliance to engagement. This is an in-person evening workshop at the Newcastle County, and we have a renowned literacy educator and author, Kelly Gallagher, who's coming to teach that. This is around teaching. Literacy is not just something that happens in kindergarten through third grade. We're always teaching reading, and Kelly Gallagher is well-known and well-respected to help make sure our upper grade teachers are able to teach reading too. They're going to learn strategies on how to foster authentic engagement, especially with adolescent writers. So moving forward, the work for our older learners. And then we've also worked on what I said last time, literacy is something I define beyond reading and writing. It's also math literacy. So we partnered with US Math Recovery to enhance teaching instruction in mathematics. And this is a course that we're putting in place that will help educators in learning to listen and observe students' thinking beyond only the right and wrong answers. When we think about great math literacy, it's not just about getting the answer, it's about how did you get the answer? What's the thinking that goes into the answer? And learning critical thinking within math. The teachers that are able to take this training are learning the research-based evidence practices that help develop mathematical thinking and builds on previous knowledge. And this course is really popular. And so we're trying to figure out how we can add additional opportunities because they're getting filled up so quickly. Teachers are wanting to learn better math practices. And two more items. We had a moderated discussion and reception that was held on March 19th. Or that's going to be held on March 19th in Dover. That's going to feature, no, actually, that just happened yesterday. I went to it. It was with Montserrat Garibay. She is the former Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of Education. I actually worked with her, and she worked at the Office of English Language Acquisition. This session was focused on our multilingual learner rights and perspectives in education, and registration was open to community members and organizations. It was supported by Delta, and our own department was also part of it. They actually asked me if I would come and be a speaker at it. They didn't realize that I knew Montserrat, but it was great to see her supporting multilingual learners in our state, and that was well attended yesterday evening. And we also supported the inaugural 302-day event that was on Sunday, March 2nd. Get it? 302 day. I learned that when I was here, that everybody has that same area code. We were able to participate in that as a Department of Education, looking at engaging our families and community members and partners in the support of literacy. I think I said it at our last meeting, that the literacy crisis is not just solved in the classroom. This is a whole estate, whole of government, whole of Delaware approach. So 302 day event was another opportunity for us to promote literacy and providing literacy materials and resources and information to the community. The more we can saturate our community with high quality literacy materials, the more we're addressing the literacy emergency. So it was great for us to be participating in 302 day event. And that is my report.
Thank you. Any questions for the secretary?
Madam Secretary, this is Reverend Powell. How are you this evening?
Hello, sir. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful. You had indicated in your report about an additional 11 literacy coaches mm-hmm. will be hired through phase two of the early literacy program. How many phases are part of the actual program? And it indicates that the coaches are to be placed by June. And I imagine the school year ends in June. So how does that carry over, I guess, either through the summer or is that for next calendar year?
That's a good question. I can't remember the timeline in terms of the number of phases that we have here. I know that there was a slow start in getting the coaches hired. The coaches that are being hired are having, they leave their district, they go, they get their training, and then they enter into working at the districts as coaches. So bringing more on took longer than people had anticipated. I think when they wrote the legislation, I was not here at the inception of it. So I'm digging in to figure out how do we make sure we get more coaches. That is why I talked about the school systems that are using a sub grant, which I approved recently to build the capacity, because some districts had already have their own literacy coaches, and they want their coaches to actually be trained by the training that we're providing through the university. So we want to have more, not less coaches. And actually, I think that, in my opinion, we could have a coach at every school and that still wouldn't be enough, but we're at least gearing up. And as I dig into the efficacy of this, making sure that they're properly trained and supported across the state. I don't know how many phases were actually built at the inception of it, because I wasn't here when they did that. I'm just digging into the increasing the support and the quality of the program as we implement it.
Good. Thank you so much. Question, do you see any opportunity to expand those services to community-based organizations as it relates to literacy coaches in addition to schools?
I mean, not through that particular grant. That's not what the grant was. My understanding, like I said, I wasn't here when it was done. Or the grant or the allocated funds from state was a $3 million investment was my understanding. And I'll tell you that when you have literacy coaches, that is the best way to move achievement. When I talked about the achievement and the reading growth in San Diego Unified, when I was superintendent there, we invested in literacy coaches and student-centered coaching cycles. That is improving the capacity of the educators in the classroom. Very important. When it comes to community-based organizations, that has always been popular in a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. After-school programs, summer programs, extended learning programs. And during COVID, lots of dollars were spent with the influx, huge influx of federal dollars. And I know this from across the country, not just in Delaware. Dollars were spent on high dosage tutoring. And I have a personal, maybe let's say professional bias that we don't tutor our way out of a pandemic or into higher reading proficiency. We want to first ensure that our teachers are equipped to teach literacy in the classroom, to teach reading, so students become reading at proficient at grade level through classroom instruction, and community-based organizations support that. Community-based organizations should not bear the responsibility it's never a burden to teach a child how to read, but a community-based organization is not the central point to teach kids how to read. That needs to happen in school, and community organizations should support the literacy growth. So that's a frame that I have from my 30 years of experience as a literacy specialist to train community-based organizations to understand how to teach reading, and the science of reading and the specifics of teaching reading is a huge effort. I have seen the best efforts are when the community-based organizations are well-funded, well-supported to support the teaching and learning that happens in the classroom. So this particular grant, I don't think what the inception of it was to fund community organizations to support reading, but that does not mean that this shouldn't happen in other ways through other granting opportunities. And for example, United Way has worked on supporting literacy growth and achievement. And I've had a good conversation with Michelle Taylor about that and what they're doing to invest in supporting and maintaining the reading levels that teachers are accomplishing in teaching kids how to read during the school day and weeks and years.
Thank you for your response and have a safe trip.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for you. The inaugural 302 Day event, where was that held, and is there going to be any more, maybe every 2 a year, or is it just going to be once a year? Because the P20 Council does have some funding that we could probably help out with on some of the items you do here.
It was at a school, and I can't remember the name of it because I'm still learning the names, but I know it was at one of our school campuses. That was it. That was exactly where it was. Thank you. That's where it was held. And okay. I didn't actually know it was, I thought you have something you guys did all the time. So it was the first annual, meaning that should be a second one next year. I would imagine, yes, this was probably sponsored through the governor's office, but if you have ideas about wanting to expand it or have the P20 Council be more part of it in future years, I can certainly help with that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Any more questions for the secretary? All right. Well, I apologize for the confusion on your minutes and starting this conversation, but if not, we're okay with it. But anyway, thank you for coming, and go ahead and get to your next meeting. Have a good night.
Thank you. I'll stay on for a little while, but I'm kind of doing two at the same time right now, but I hate to miss this. So I'll stay on for a little bit. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next on the agenda is a presentation, Developing Leaders, Advancing Delaware's Educational Pipeline. This is for information. Dr. Michael Saylor, Director of the Educator Excellence Office, and Brandy Fox, Education Associate of School Leadership, are here to present information on Delaware's Educator Leadership Pipeline. There you are. Welcome.
Are we okay sitting here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I hate to sit and present. That's really hard for me. I guess that's the teacher in me. So thank you so much. Again, Michael Saylor, the Director of Educator Excellence. Thank you for inviting us. I'm with my colleague, Brandy Fox, who leads all of the school leadership work within the Educator Excellence Work Group. Prior to this role, she was a very successful principal. So we're lucky to have a principal in that role helping to lead this important work. And you're going to learn quite a lot about the work that's happening to support leaders across the state. When I came to the state 7 years ago, that was the role that I came in. So it's a really important position on our team that I hold dear to my heart. Love that role. So if we can just, do you want me to click? I will click.
Perfect.
Maybe. I'll do this. We got this.
The clicker is not working.
One more. There you go. I thought that it may be helpful for you just to see the context of the Educator Excellence Work Group and the work that happens along the continuum of our pipeline. So this is how we do it in these seven steps, really. So when we think about early engagement, something that's happening right now that should be announced within the next couple of weeks as approved is our new apprenticeship for teacher for paraprofessional. So that'll be a new apprenticeship, registered apprenticeship within the state. An apprenticeship that we registered a little over a year ago then under recruitment is our K-12 teacher apprenticeship. Under preparation, Secretary Martin mentioned one of our major initiatives right now, which is making sure that the preparation for our candidates in our educator preparation programs are really getting prepared with alignment to the science of reading. The next two blocks there, induction, growth feedback, those are things that you've heard about from me recently. So when you think about induction, we've just implemented a new induction program across the state, as well as a new teacher evaluation system. You often hear it referred to as DTGSS. Teacher leadership is something that we've had a new focus on, especially as a result of PEC. And I had the chance to work alongside Margie Lopez-Waite, who co-led a smaller working group around the importance of teacher leadership as we think about opportunities for our educators to be able to grow. And then you're going to hear a lot about that last block there, which is school leadership tonight. I just wanted to quickly share how we approach our work within Educator Excellence. I usually share this with you when I present, but I know that we have five drivers that we've identified. We really focus on the recruitment, preparation, induction, advancement, development, and our evaluation system. And you see we're focused on both teacher and leader. And all of our work is informed by data so that we can reach that aim, which is to develop a sustainable educator workforce that supports equitable access to excellent teaching and leading for all students. And the question is that we always get is it working? So on the next slide, you're going to see a report that Secretary Martin is probably very familiar with because it came out of her office when she was in DC. But there was a report the last 2 years called a Raise the Bar report. One of the findings in that was to look at, is the educator workforce growing from pre-pandemic, from the pre-pandemic rates? And for 2 years in a row, this report was ran and this data was analyzed. Delaware did rank number one in the nation for growing its workforce post-pandemic. So that's something that we're very proud of. I share that with you because a big part of that retention and the recruitment is school leadership. We know from our mobility study that we do that when we ask anybody in the state, every time there's a movement in a position, we survey them and we ask them, why are you changing positions? Nationally and within the state, the number one reason is always school leadership. We know that school leaders matter. So often you'll see educators, teachers following good leaders. And sometimes when a new leader comes, you do see teacher turnover. Right? At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Brandy to share some more information about our programming.
Okay. So again, my name is Brandy Fox. I am new in this role as of June of 2024, but I did hit the ground running. I'm excited to be in the role because I believe that leadership matters. Recent research shows that school leadership is second only to classroom instruction when you think about the Wallace work and the impact that a leader has on student outcomes and student achievement. And so some of the work that we've done was highlighted in the National Innovation State Board article. And so in this presentation, I linked the article there for you so that you can further read about some of it. But tonight you're going to hear about some of the work that was highlighted in that national newsletter. So what you see here, this is basically how we do our work. Everything we do within our workforce, my team is called the Educator Excellence Work Team, and I am led by Dr. Saylor, but we work under a greater team called the Workforce Support Team. All of the work that we do is aligned to research. And so what you're going to see here, this information is from a Wallace research study, which is a self-study that we walk through with LEAs to create a pipeline throughout the state. But we also align our own work within the work group to those seven domains. So what you're going to see in this infographic, we're going to actually walk through each of those domains. And if you have questions, I will be sure to answer them if you have further questions. But we're going to walk through each of the seven domains of our work that is basically based off of the Wallace research model. The reason that we use the framework is because we want to make sure that what we're doing is research-based, data-driven, and that it's a comprehensive and aligned process and not something that's siloed. So the first domain within the Wallace self-study and the work that we use is domain number one. The question around that domain is, are there leadership standards? Are you setting the bar and what are you working from? And so the question for Delaware itself is, do we have Delaware standards for leaders? The answer is yes. We were the first state to adopt the PCEL standards for leadership in 2016. So every effort we take within leadership that's going to go from domain 1 through 7, my job is to make sure that all the work we do aligns to those PCEL standards. So every partnership we have, every training we have, every induction, we work to make sure that they are aligned to those PCEL standards. And that is regulated by 1590, the Delaware Administrator Standards. And so domain number 2 is high quality pre-service. Based on the regulations 290 and 291, my role is to take regulation from policy to impact. So we look at the regulation, we look at the standards, and we make sure that the things we're doing for pre-service, meaning leadership preparation programs, when leaders lead these programs, are they ready to lead a building? Are they ready to be an assistant principal or principal and lead in a way that's going to impact student outcomes and growth, not just managerial, but leading outcomes for student improvement? And so the way we are doing that now, we make sure that all of the preparation programs, the universities, the art route programs, we're making sure that they are aligned to the standards and then also aligned to what we're going to go over that's called the leadership prep reports. Currently, we have, in addition to the traditional leadership preparation projects, programs, we have 3 different alt route to certifications as well. So one of those is the PPP program, which is a principal prep program through UD. We also have a SEAL program through UD, which is the Special Education Administrator Certification. So that's working with someone who will potentially be a district spec ed coordinator. And then also we have Fourth Dimension. The reason this is important to our work is because we use federal funding to support the work, but then I also work with those leadership preparation programs to make sure that they're aligned and make sure that they're effective. So the next thing you're going to hear is about how we are working with them to make sure the quality of the program is good and that when leaders lead, they're ready. That's through the leadership preparation reports. So that is also in regulation as well. You can go to the next slide.
Can I ask a quick question? Are these leadership prep programs applicable to both traditional schools and charter schools?
Yes.
Oh.
All right.
All of those programs lead to a certification.
That's what I was asking.
All right. And so if I'm not understanding the question, I want to make sure I'm explaining
it.
Thank you. So this is still under domain 2 for high quality pre-service. So we have the regulation, we have the way that we work with the LPPs to make sure that the programs are effective. This is the trajectory that this LPP process has gone, because there is going to be a public facing report that will explain the effectiveness of the programs. And we also will use this data to make recommendations for improvement. So in 2223, the framework was developed. From that framework, there were 6 domains that were created, and those domains were created using the regulation, the state regulation. So we work with national partners. We worked with every leadership preparation program, whether they were traditional or off route, and we brought them all together and we created the framework and the domains together. From that, we did our first cycle of data collection for 23-24. And then currently we are now in our second cycle of data collection. Each of those 6 domains have metrics that say, are we effective in this area? It's rated. And then from that data, the goal is to shift into accountability year for the 25-26 school year, keeping in mind that the data is always a year lag behind. So when we start 25-26, we'll be using 24-25 data. So from that, we will then shift into what the public reports. Those will be the things that are published online for everyone to see. Before we shift to that, though, what we've been working on is meeting with those leadership preparation programs early to start having conversations around what we're seeing in the data. From that, so we created these infographics with we have an amazing data team here at DOE. And so they take all of the data that's in the Excel reports and they aggregate it into this infographic, which gives us pull downs. And we are going to be meeting with each leadership preparation program and having conversations around each specific metric, where they rated and what recommendations there are for improvement. The key to this is because this ties to regulation for approval of programs once they're reviewed. So your program will be reviewed every 2 years, even though we collect data every year, and then every 2 years, a program within a regulation has to be reviewed. And this will give us the data to review those programs so that we're not making arbitrary decisions, but we're making decisions based on data and metrics. You can go to the next slide.
Let me tell you a little bit about Domain 3. This was probably one of the most fun projects that I've worked on, and it was in 2021. At that point, I was in Brandy's role, and I was working with someone from the University of Delaware that you may know, named Mark Holodick, who was at the university at that point. And the two of us brought together stakeholders to develop a toolkit that our districts could use when selecting, hiring, and placing school leaders. So each component, and you see the four components there, are aligned to the PSEL standards. So everything from posting the position so that we aren't just pulling up the last posting that we used when we needed an assistant principal, but really looking at what are the needs of the school and making sure that the posting is specific to the needs of that school. And how do you screen candidates in a way to reduce bias in the screening process, as well as in the interview process? So there's a bank of questions and a bank of performance tasks, all that are PSEL aligned. So in an ideal hiring situation, when you're deciding on the interview questions and the way that you're screening candidates, you will be able to get some data across all 10 PSEL standards. And then finally, as you onboard folks and give them continued support, what should that look like beyond just an induction program and a mentoring program? We make this toolkit available to all of our districts and charters that are involved in the equity-centered principal pipeline program. You'll hear about that. Preview it, it's gonna be in domain 7. Of course, the one disclaimer there is at the top is that ultimately districts maintain the hiring authority. That's not the role of the SEA, but we can provide them tools to be successful at hiring candidates.
And the reason we made this a part of our work is because the Wallace research showed that selective hiring helps with retention. And so when you're making decisions about being really strategic about your hiring, then the research shows that you're retaining your leaders in ways that they're not getting burned out and you're choosing the best leaders. Thank you.
I've got a question on that. Are there rubrics so that, for example, when the employer gets the data back to see, you know, where they would fall, that, you know, are they doing a superlative job or are they, you know, just beginning and they could, you know, ways they could improve.
Yeah, some of the items do have a scoring guidance.
Okay, great.
You made mention of, I was trying to write it down, you went really quick on this equity, you said those charters.
Equity Center Principal Pipe.
Okay, so those charters that choose to be a part of that, you indicated.
Yeah, we bring in new cohorts. I don't want to steal too much of it, but basically to develop a 3 to 5 year plan for your succession planning, basically, for school leaders within your district or charter. We have 9 districts and charters involved in it now. I think 2/3 are districts and 1/3 charters.
They're not just charter schools, but we're going to talk more about that when we get to domain number 7, because that is specifically the research around that domain.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So domain number 4, research shows that with evaluation, you need to have support. Because if you're just evaluating leaders but don't have support for the evaluation system and process, then that's a reason that you tend to lose leaders. And so one of the things, again, from policy to impact is our purpose. Regulation 108A determines the evaluation system for leaders. That's called the DPAS system for evaluators, for administrators. The way that we support the evaluation system is that we also offer year one mentoring through Regulation 1503, which is comprehensive induction programs. So every new leader to the state is not just left to learn on their own. I'm actually a product of the very first induction program. And so I went through that as an assistant principal, and then I became a principal and did some really great work in our district. And so within that process, we offer year one mentoring. And so we pay for the mentoring for that person. We train the mentors to make sure it's aligned to the leadership standards. And then the actual mentees, they get PCEL aligned professional learning throughout the year. In 7 different sessions. Some of them are in person, some of them are online, and we do them in a cohort. So we start them out in a cohort and then we roll them through. Year 1 is mandatory according to regulation, but we also wanted to include something for after, right? What happens after you become an assistant principal, you're a new leader, and you're progressing in your career. So we've also offered year 2 coaching and professional learning. So as an assistant principal in their 2nd year, when they're done with induction, they have an opportunity to get 20 hours of coaching in their actual position. So they get real life support with the problems of practice in their building, boots on the ground. And then they also have professional learning that they attend with us. We have several that we do throughout the year. And then when you become a year 1 principal, we also want to make sure we don't just leave you there, because principaling is very different than being an assistant principal. We think it's the same, sometimes it is very different. So we offer year 1 principal coaching and professional development as well. And we make sure that all of the things we do are aligned to the evaluation, but that we're supporting them in that process of them growing throughout.
So can I just ask the same question again? The evaluation process is the same for charter school leaders and traditional schools?
Yes.
And all the professional learning, all of that stuff is the same. The mentoring, the coaching, the support is the same in both settings.
Yes.
Okay.
So the year 1 induction is for all new administrators. Coaching is very differentiated based on the need of that educator.
Okay.
So if you're a 2nd year assistant principal and I am, our coaching may look very different based on our need as well as our setting.
And it's available to any public school. So that would be charter school or traditional.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And so we didn't stop with supports there. So what happens after you become an AP and a principal, and maybe you want to move into district leadership? What does that look like for you? So we have what's called the Governance Institute for School Leadership that we work with different community partners to offer additional professional learning. And under that process, I oversee 4 of the different programs. So we have an AP Academy. That means that you are now in your 3rd year as an assistant principal. You've shown excellence in your field, and your superintendent would like to nominate you because he sees more potential in you to potentially grow as a principal. So then you have an opportunity to participate in that program. The Executive Leadership Program is for anyone who has an interest in being a district leader, but maybe a principal at the time. And then we also have professional learning for superintendents and charter school leaders, which is called our study council. So those are programs for people who are already a superintendent and already a charter school leader, and we're helping them continue to grow their own learning and their capacity together in cohort models. We offer financial support for these so that it is 0 cost to the participant. From our work group. And then we also work with the community partners. So UD helps us with the Governance Institute for School Leadership, and I work with them to make sure that all of the modules and things that they're doing are aligned to the standards that we started out with. Through our academic supports team at DOE, not necessarily on our work group, they also do Early Literacy Leadership Academy, and that academy is focused on literacy leaders in buildings. So how do you lead literacy within your building as a principal? And they offer professional development throughout the year for that. And then so you heard Dr. Saylor talk about Delaware Teacher Growth and Support Systems. That's the teacher evaluation system. However, in order for a leader to lead well, they have to know that evaluation system very well. And they have to learn how to give effective feedback, because if you don't give effective feedback, then you cannot grow your workforce. And so our office, through one of my colleagues, Angela Socorso, she supports 3 different levels of building leadership around DTGSS, so we can make sure not just that the teachers are trained, but that the leaders are giving really good feedback and they know how to grow the capacity of their teachers. And so we offer office hours for the leaders. We work with district leadership to make sure that we have monthly meetings for any new things that are coming up. We also offer specific trainings where principals can come in for 20 minutes and work on a problem of practice. Like if they had a hard time with a conference with a teacher, how can we help you within that conversation? And how can we help you give more effective feedback. And then we also have teacher support, which are teacher leadership roles for DTGSS to continue to grow the work. And so those are some of the other ways that we not only evaluate, but offer support within the evaluation. And so I just wanted to give some examples because our goal is to be boots on the ground and in the field with the people. So you'll see us in some of the pictures here with some of our professional learning opportunities. Up to the left, that was one of our charter school study councils. They began to work on different strategic plans and they work in, it's amazing to see the work happening because it's really like there's a lot of energy in a room. It's not just people sitting and listening, but we're working in groups and working on real problems of practice together. You'll see our superintendent study council, governance institute, you'll see us working in small groups. If you follow us on social media and LinkedIn, you'll see some of us out there as we're moving around and working with new principals and assistant principals and all the programs that we're doing. The goal is that we're not making decisions from what people perceive as the ivory tower, right? But that we're in the field with the people and doing the work with them. So all of the programs that I talked about, we actually attend those learning sessions with them. We're in those systems with them. We're working and learning alongside them. So it doesn't feel like we're making decisions that people have to follow. For leaders across the state. And so domain number five, according to Wallace research, shows that the old way of principaling and supervising principals doesn't work. Managerial styles don't work. And so one of the things that we're working to do, even though our PCEL standards are not differentiated based on position, we use from the CCSSO, the model principal supervisor professional standards to begin to help principal supervisors know how to coach their principals to become better principals. And so those are some of the work we do as well through the Equity Center Principal Pipeline. And we're going to get to that one, I promise you. But then some of the, what you'll see up here, this is us in one of our credentialing trainings. So in order to evaluate a principal, you have to have a special training, which we call credentialing. We make sure that that is not a sit and get, but that we are going over real live evaluations that I've taken, I've anonymized and taken all names out of, and we're giving real life feedback. How would you rate this? Why would you rate it that way? What kind of conversation would you have with the principal if they rated this and this was the evidence they showed you? So our trainings for credentialing and preparing leaders to evaluate principals is very hands-on. We have example simulations that they can watch through video, and then we also walk through those processes together. And so that is a part of the evaluation system, but again, we don't want to just evaluate, we want to use it as a tool to build capacity. And so that's why we have all of these supports available. And then number six is leader tracking system.
Yeah, I'll briefly talk about what a leader tracking system is. So you just have to imagine that it's an online platform that really helps to inform the planning of your succession work. We worked with the Data Service Center in 2022 and developed a prototype for an integrated leader tracking system. So imagine different permissions based on your role, from the teacher who wants to be a leader, who can add things to their profile, to the principal who knows that they're going to need a teacher leader or an assistant principal, or somebody at the district office that wants to forecast what the future openings are going to look like. So every employee has a profile page with career pathways. So if I am maybe an instructional coach and aspire to be an assistant principal, I could go in, the system would analyze what my current training is and credentials and design for me what the next steps would be, what requirements would I need to meet for that position. If I'm sitting at the district office and I know that I have assistant principal is probably going to retire within the next 2 years in my high school, where there's a Title I school and maybe they have high special education population. I may want to filter by everybody that has their certification, that has a special ed certification and has worked in a Title I school before, and then see how many folks are on the bench. We were so close to launching it. I even have a YouTube tutorial on it I can share with you. And then Data Service Center had some staff changes and they put it on the back burner. Brandy bothers them every few months.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
When are we going to be able to move forward with this? So we're very close to moving forward with it. We would be the first state to have a statewide leader tracking system where then teachers could say, you know what, like, I want to share my profile with these other three districts too, so that they can see me, right? So there would be, it would be a really interesting approach. And it would integrate so nicely with our other platforms that we have, like Deeds and First. All right.
And so now we can pull the data from separate systems, but this makes it more comprehensive and aligned. And so I believe we will have favor with them, and we're going to get it pushed through next year. We're going to work on it. I'm working on it. And so domain number 7, which is the last domain, but not the least important domain, but it really aligns all of the work that we do. The goal for leadership for our team is to create a pipeline where we start from teacher all the way up through district leadership and whatever that looks like in between, even if you don't want to become a principal. What if you want to be an instructional coach? I had a great instructional coach, but she said, Mrs. Fox, I will never be a principal. That's not what I want to do. And so, but we help differentiate what leadership looks like for people so that they can find their niche and get into the right places of their passion. And so the Equity Center Principal Pipeline is a cross-district collaborative professional development and learning community. So right now we're working with 9 LEAs and we have 3 to 4 PLCs a year where we come together, we dig into the rubric aligned data that talks about how to create a really good pipeline within your district. And so we're working with district teams within, so all LEAs bring a whole team. So sometimes the deputy superintendent there, maybe the charter school leader, they bring their HR team, they bring teacher leaders, they bring instructional coaches. And so we work with them. We partner with national consultants. We didn't get Wallace funding for it, so we do use some of our DOE funding to support the work. But we use the Wallace Research and Foundation to do that. And some of our actual national, the national partners we work with have worked with Wallace and for Wallace in some other areas. And so they lead our PLCs. And then we, from that, each LEA creates their own action plan for creating a pipeline within their district to retain leaders and to build leaders. And to build a structure so that they can begin to grow leaders within their district. That is based on rubric score. So they rate themselves in a self-study. We go through a long process where they're looking at their own district data, determining where they fall within the 7 different domains. And then they choose one specific space to work on an action plan for a year. We fund that for them so that they have funds to support the work that they're doing within their district. These are just 3 examples of some from the 9 LEAs that have happened. We have one who created a teacher leadership development program. And so this was a smaller district who didn't necessarily have a great pool of people to choose from at the higher level. So instead of thinking of district leadership for them, they thought of teacher leadership. So we make it differentiated so that it's applicable in what's needed for each LEA, whether they're Northern or Southern Delaware. And then we have the ones created Aspiring Leaders Academy, and we're working with them on that. Some of the teams that we had, I think 3 of them actually, have advanced. They're really advanced in the process that they've gone through. So we have supported them working with Learning Forward to now move their plans to the next level. And they're working on a leadership development plan on a national level with Learning Forward. And so we supported them by offering paying for their district teams to be able to support that, to receive that learning together. And so that's the goal of how we're choosing to sustain the system that we've built. Because we want it, we made sure that it was comprehensive, we made sure that it's aligned, but we want to make sure it's sustainable. And so we're using some of our funds to sustain the work and help them through mini grants to continue the work. And then we also talk about what happens, you know, after, because the goal next year is to start a new cohort. And so we want to continue with them learning. So the goal is for those who have already gone through the process that we will still meet with them a couple times a year to offer professional learning for them. And so the goal is next steps. What's next? Again, we use data to make decisions about next steps. We have surveys. We do qualitative and quantitative data analysis with our team, with our data team here through surveys and, of course, being in the field. And we have a, we've implemented a five-year strategic plan within our work group. And I think we're in the third year of that. I came in like in June. So I was like, where are we within this place? But we are in the third year of that plan. And the goal is that we're also, one of our partners from the state board gave us a new tool that we're going to pilot this year, which was really good. So we worked on filling it out. It has 31 questions based on 7 different domains, which is a lot of the work that we're already, some of the work we're already doing. So I was really excited to see this National Association for Board for the Boards. It's a preview tool that has 31 questions under 7 domains, and you're evaluating your system to see where you fall within that. And then from that, it's going to give a snapshot of areas that we can make things more aligned. And so we're going to be one of a few states piloting that. So we've filled that out. We're going to wait for some feedback from it. So we're excited about that process. The goal is to continue to foster sustainability. We're going to continue to strengthen our partnerships by meeting with the leadership preparation programs and continuing that work. We're also working on expanding the mentorship program because we want to look to see what the current support for district mentors, if they're mentoring new principals. We're surveying them this year to see how effective they think their training is going so that we can get better training for them as mentors. And then we're going to increase that pipeline from 9 LEAs, and the goal is to get more LEAs involved in the 25-26 school year. And so we've been working, we have a couple, we do site visits to districts where we go over data with them and talk to them about the things, the work that we do. And from those site visits, we have a couple that are ready to move into the pipeline work next year. So we're really excited about that. So that's our next steps. And then of course, the last slide is, it's a lot of work and we can't do it by ourselves. So everything we do, we're meeting with community stakeholders around the state. We have different partnerships. These are not all of them, but you'll see, again, our goal is to be in the field with the people. And so you'll see us out and about working alongside and learning alongside our leaders so that we can get a better feel for if what we're offering is really working. And if not, we make adjustments. And so even within our strategic plan, we don't wait until a year out to make changes. We have monthly meetings where we do check-ins on our strategic plan. And then we also have quarterly meetings where we do our check-ins to see if this isn't working, how can we make adjustments now so that we're not waiting until the end of the year. So although we have some long-term goals, we make adjustments along the way based on feedback from the stakeholders that we work with because we are here to serve them. So that's the work we do. If you have any questions, I'm always available. And
Brandy doesn't sleep. So all the things that you just saw on the slide are initiatives that she is the point person that she leads. So she is very, very busy. I'm really good at recruiting. I mean, she said that she was a part of the induction program. She was part of the induction program when I was running it.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's something about that one. And I stayed in touch with Brandy and we had that position open on our team. We were so lucky to have Brandy come. Very excited to have that principal.
Almost 10
voice.
Years later.
10 years later. Yeah. I feel old. Happy to take any questions and just a thank you to Deb Stevens for giving us that tool that was mentioned. We've completed it. We're ready to share it with Kathleen and Deb to get some feedback on before it gets passed along.
Well, let me thank you for agreeing to participate with this project. I think I've told my colleagues here on the state board, we participated last year, and Michael, you were also part of it for a year-long program that NASB had done on principalship, which was extremely valuable, so valuable, in fact, that NASB is continuing that program again this year, and I think the first meeting that they're having is scheduled for April 29th. I'll be out of the country, unfortunately, for that meeting, but hopefully one of my colleagues, if they'd be willing to attend in my place. But I was impressed with the tool. And when Michael said, yeah, this looks good, and Brandy will really do a bang-up job, and you have. I mean, I want to also compliment you on the hands-on approach you've taken with so much of this, having watched various programs implemented in the past, to see so much of DOE staff out in the field working, coaching, guiding people, I think has made a huge, huge difference. I think it conveys to people out in the districts that you are there for support and assistance. And I think it has really perceptually, as well as technically, made a big difference, especially when you see some of these changes coming down, that it's not a matter of here it is, go do. It's here it is, how can we help you? And I think that's huge. The other thing that excites me is also seeing what you're doing with teacher leadership. Because again, being around when the first teacher leadership pilot came out, oh God, how many years ago, Michael?
That was about 10 years ago.
About 10 years ago. And seeing what some of the challenges were at that time and some of the misconceptions of what teacher leadership could be, it seems very clear that you have, you know, taken a look from that, seen what the results were, and modified the teacher leader program to be something that is going to develop true teacher leaders within the building. So I commend you. Also tell Angela, I love her. I commend her as well.
Everybody loves Angela.
We love Angela.
She does a great job, but thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And you're right, that teacher leadership work is so important. It was a great committee that Margie co-chaired, and we made some great recommendations, and we are hopeful that those recommendations get some traction and we're able to start implementing some of those changes.
Right.
Thank you.
Any more questions? I thank you for your presentation. Again, leadership is the most important and critical piece and make sure everybody has a great workforce. And I'm just going to say that I've always told people managers have the title, leaders have the people. So I thank you again for coming and have a good night.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is charter schools. It's charter school updates. This is for information. Leeward Travers, director of the charter school office, is here to provide updates on the work in the charter school office and answer any questions from the board. Mr. Travers, come on up. Thank you for joining us. Any questions? Any updates?
So no written report this week, but I did want to just let the board know that we have resumed. We pressed pause on our school visits with DOE leadership and other members as we went through renewals, but we've resumed those visits. And Ms. Smith does have our upcoming visit schedule. I think we have 12 to 15 still to take place over the course of the rest of the school year. And we would love to have some members of the state board join us. So Ms. Smith does have that schedule. So if you are interested, you can reach out to her, reach out to me directly and just let me know so I can let the schools know who will be joining us there. We actually have done four this week and they are just very insightful. And I know some of you have actually already done stuff, but they're very insightful. And I think you would find them not only enjoyable, but informative.
Any questions for Mr. Travers?
Leroy, if we want to go with you, do we just call you and say, can I come?
Yes, if you would just give me a few days notice, we do reach out to the schools several days in advance just to let them know who's coming.
Great. Remember, if you want to go on these visitations, please contact Kathleen so she can line this up for everybody. I'm going to try and do a couple of the Sussex ones. I know where a couple of them are, but...
all three in Sussex are still in the futures.
All righty. Well, if there's no questions, I thank you for your time and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Next is regulations, Delaware Department of Education regulations for discussion or action. Juliet Morawski, Director of Higher Education Office, is here to present three regulations for information. First one is Regulation 1211, Career-Based Scholarship Program, 1216, Educator Support Scholarship Program, and 1217, Mental Health Services Scholarship. Go ahead and present all three, and then if there's any questions, we'll follow up.
Sure. Thank you very much. I'm here tonight to present to you information regarding amendments to three regulations, 1211, the Career-Based Scholarship Program, 1216, Educator Support Scholarship Program, and 1217, the Mental Health Scholarship Program. The purpose of these amendments is to reinstate the free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA requirements for these scholarships, so that the Higher Education Office can consider an applicant's financial need as part of the eligibility process for those scholarships. These proposed changes are due to the U.S. Department of Education's release of the fully operational 2025-2026 FAFSA application. As a result, students are now able to successfully submit their FAFSA forms. Some of you may remember about this time last year, I presented to the State Board a proposal to remove the FAFSA requirements due to delays and significant technical issues with the 24-25 FAFSA application. Thankfully, these issues that caused so much difficulty to students have been resolved. And so for the 25-26 FAFSA application cycle, it is fully operational. Students can now complete their FAFSA, and our office is able to access the information and import it into students' financial aid applications. To support students in the FAFSA application, our office sends email reminders to scholarship applicants who have applied for scholarships but have not yet completed a FAFSA. These emails provide information on how to complete the FAFSA, reminders of the upcoming deadline for scholarship applications, and offers resources and additional assistance to students to complete their FAFSA. In particular, for our Delaware High School seniors, our office sends biweekly updates to counselors and principals with school-specific FAFSA completion data. This includes a list of seniors with their FAFSA application status. So, for example, we'll send a list with everybody in a specific school, and we'll say whether they did or did not complete their FAFSA. And if their FAFSA was completed with an error, for example, we would indicate that and we would give them resources on how to resolve the issues. We partner with an organization through United Way called Stand By Me, Financial Empowerment Organization. They offer at no cost to every student in a Delaware public charter school, on-demand, one-on-one support for FAFSA completion. They can come into the school, work with groups, work with individual students. Students and families can also work with Stand By Me to schedule online evening FAFSA support. So as of this morning, the Higher Education Office received 934 applications for the three scholarships before you tonight. 718 of those applicants have already completed a FAFSA. This means that approximately 77% of all applicants for these scholarships have already completed their FAFSA. We will, of course, continue outreach and support for our students for FAFSA completion. I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have a question. On Regulation 1211, the career-based scholarship, under eligibility, do you think, because it is a need-based scholarship, should we add under eligibility or something that indicates that it's need-based?
For the 1211 career-based scholarship?
Yes.
So it is, so need is a component of eligibility. And so in addition to having financial need, students need to be in specific majors for this. And so when a student applies for a scholarship, we're looking at where they're going to college and what major they're in. So for example, for the career-based scholarships, the eligible majors would be accounting, business, computer science, finance. And so in addition to having financial need, they also need to be in these eligible majors. So when we're looking at our overall applicant pool, just like all of our scholarships, many students will apply that may not be in the areas of eligibility. So we'll look at eligibility and then financial need.
I guess what I'm saying is under eligibility, it's not clear that it's need-based. So I'm wondering if under eligibility section 3.0, if you should add something that says it is need-based, because we're obviously filling out a FAFSA form, right?
Yes. So the FAFSA form is used to let us know what the financial status is for the family.
Right.
We use that to determine how far we can go with our pool of money, if that makes sense.
Right.
And so there's no cutoff point for eligibility. Mm-hmm. It depends on the applicant pool that year. And so we are looking at utilizing the funds to those with the greatest need. So it is a component of it, which is why we have it under awards. I believe it is under 5.0, 5.2.1.
Yeah, actually, and I have a question about that too. But
yes,
because it's no longer expected family contribution. It's SAE student.
SAE, you are correct. Yes.
So I think that, but it,
That is an error.
Okay.
And so on the other two regulation, that name has been updated. So what used to be the estimated family contribution is now the student aid index.
Right.
That was an error on 211, which will be corrected.
Right. I think that my question's not clear. Is one of the eligibility requirements for this that you have to qualify as far as need? Like you have to show it is a need-based scholarship, correct?
We have several different types of scholarship, and I know where you're getting
that. Okay.
We have one scholarship called the Scholarship Incentive Program that is purely need-based, meaning this is not before you tonight.
Okay.
But that scholarship is based entirely on your FAFSA results.
Okay.
We are not looking at the major other than eligibility in a Delaware institution. For this one, it is a component of eligibility. And so it is not purely our need-based. It's one of our major specific scholarships. FAFSA is part of the eligibility criteria or the awarding criteria in order to rank students, if that makes sense.
Yes, but I still feel like if it is a component of eligibility, then under eligibility, it should say that. Does that make sense?
It does. I do see where you're getting at. Yes, absolutely. I don't want to discourage students and families for applying for this scholarship, because when you think need-based scholarships, very often students and families are thinking of like those with the very greatest needs, like students are getting the Pell Grant, for example, would have the lowest SAI. For this particular scholarship, because we're looking at the major as well, you could have a higher SAI in terms of your family eligibility to pay for college and still be eligible for one of these scholarships because of the major component as well. But I absolutely see where you're coming from, yes. And thank you for pointing out that technical correction. It will be corrected.
Anything else?
Are we considered all?
Yes.
One question is probably not related directly, but you talked about FAFSA completion and be able to complete the form. You had challenges of ledger.
Yes.
How do you envision technology of AI intertwining with this new ability to fill out information at record based paces, and so it's not so laborsome now? And so how do you really look down the road how AI is going to impact FAFSA and all those types of things?
That's a really good question that I don't have an answer for. There are so many things that I'm thinking about right now that could affect FAFSA eligibility and ability to fill out these forms. I have not actually heard much information about AI in terms of completing applications, maybe because for this particular application, it does require verification sometimes at the institutional level. So when a student or family fills out the FAFSA, if they are selected for verification, then the college itself, where the student ends up going, has to collect information to show that the self-reported information maybe is correct on the FAFSA. So I've not really personally thought about how AI connects with that, because it's really looking for, you know, how many people are in your family? What's your, you know, adjusted gross income? A lot of the income information is also pulled in from the IRS directly. So I don't know. I am quite sure people who are much smarter and knowledgeable than I will have figured out ways to make AI applicable in this. And it's certainly not on my radar in terms of scholarship applications right now, because the information we collect is pretty straightforward for students. But thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. I just recently visited my CPA and was talking about the impact of AI and how that's eliminating individuals who are populating tax returns. And pretty soon it's really going to be just automated. And so I just wanted to know in terms of how we are looking down the road in education, how that's going to impact.
I would imagine, and I know for over the years that I've been in financial aid before this role, the ability to download information from the IRS to FAFSA has only been in place for a couple of years. And before that, it really was data entry by the family. And so that has become streamlined in the last couple of years. And I would imagine that's going to get even more so.
Challenge it or find out how to do it. That's for sure.
Not sure.
Any further questions? All right. Well, thank you for your time and have a good evening.
Thank you.